Good evening, America, and good afternoon, Australia, and welcome to everyone listening across the planet this evening, today, wherever you are in the universe. This is Insight Intelligence, and I'm your host, and I will introduce you to my gorgeous co-host, Mario Beckes, in one moment. But before I do that, if you're listening live on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter, Hannah is ready and waiting with connections to anything that we talk about this week, and in particular, the way that you can connect with Mr. Mario Beckes from Insight Intelligence. Now, each week we do a little welcome to country, and it goes a little bit like this. I respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and broadcast, and pay my respect to the elders past and present, and all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here today. Now, this is your next installment in our ongoing series called Insight Intelligence with Mario Beckes. And what you need to know about Mario is that he grew up in communist Croatia, which was then part of Yugoslavia. And he witnessed a lot of social unrest and proceeded to enter the armed forces and the secret service in his early part of life. He now runs a global company focused on investigation and managing your private files and data, amongst many other things. And Mario is a natural born leader. He's a public speaker, an educator, a trainer, a results driven, best selling published book author. And we are really privileged to have him with us here today. I call him my friend, and I'm so delighted to share these co-hosted series with him. Welcome back to the show, Mario.
Tony, thank you very much. And I'd like to say thank you to all listeners in Australia, US, across the globe. I'd like to say thank you to Tony Lonti's team in US, who enabling us to have this interview in real time, wherever we are across this beautiful blue rock. And as well, if I make it this, if I can take this freedom and be free to say something to all our listeners, yesterday was a Tony Lonti's birthday. I tried to sing that song, but I know
it was beautiful.
Thank you so much. And I say thank you, Tony Lonti's, for being the great host. Thank you for being a great friend. And most importantly, thank you for giving opportunity to people like myself to express to the global audience. So happy birthday, Tony. And, you know, I'm wishing you every success and happiness and health in the future.
Oh, Mario, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We have another power-packed show for our audience, and it's a powerful topic. We'll be talking about whistleblowers and informants, and it's an important discussion to have today. And with your permission, Mario, before we get on to this subject, I just want to quickly ask your thoughts. Before we went to air, I quickly sat down and watched some snippet of news on the TV. And there, front and centre, was Mr. Vladimir Putin being very aggressive and a bully. And I just thought, I need to ask Mario your thoughts, because you lived in that area of the world, i.e. Europe. And I just, his words really upset me. And I'm just at the point where I find myself almost yelling at the TV going, why is someone not standing up to this bully? And I think he's a big bully. So quickly, Mario, before we get on today's topic, I just wanted to hear your learned thoughts on this man, what's happening in Ukraine.
Well, I just going to go a little bit back in time, 80 years today. In 1941, German Wehrmacht launched Operation Barbarossa 22nd of June 1941 with almost 4 million soldiers invading then Soviet Union. In 1942, the German Wehrmacht was driving through the Ukraine towards the Crimea and then the Caucasus and Chechnya and so on. On that quest, there was a journalist following Germans, and there were Italian journalists who asked the Ukrainian people why, you know, a year before you welcomed Germans, now fighting them. And they said the one simple answer: from two devils, we choose one who speaks our language, which was Stalin at that stage. Putin counting on this. It's very important to people understand the Russians, you know, that federation consists on many different ethnic backgrounds, different in nationalities, but all what they have, because of that vast space and the way how they feel, they believe that Putin is the greatest thing. And Putin counting on this. And that's the reason why he's a bully, because believing that he has you know, all the Russian people behind them. And of course, I truly believe that somebody, somehow, somewhere, apart of Zelensky and the Ukrainian people, which they are doing tremendous job.
Aren't they just?
Yeah, look, I can say something from my experience. It was a much more smaller scale. I admire everybody who is stand up to the bully because, Tony, we must understand one thing. It is not just Ukrainian army fighting Russians. They're fighting the machinery which was being built for 80 years. And, you know, Russians are throwing everything mercilessly. They don't care what they're going to destroy.
They don't,
do
they? Yeah. Like, they just don't
And I believe that, as I said, like, you know, we can be angry as much as we want, but I truly believe that every minute, every hour, Putin is going to go to the tremendous suffering more than anybody else and his citizens, and bully always meet the end. How his end is going to be,
so.
I don't know, but it will be, because even they, citizens of Russia, they have enough. And maybe you didn't notice, all the listeners, there's a lot of fires across the Russia. In heart of Moscow today was again one of the institutes, and they have a lot of these fires and people burning the cars. Yeah, so I think it's always going to meet his end.
I sincerely hope so, because I just find it distressing that rush for power, that bullying behavior, is resulting in the loss of lives of beautiful human people and the destruction of a beautiful country. War is never the answer, ever.
Never was, never will be. And tragedy is with every war. War ends, but trauma and the losses and damage goes on for the decades after the war, and generations are suffering. You can just imagine all these little kids, you know, being in the basements. I remember when I was very young soldier and saw these kids and families in the basement with every sound, they will, you know, will twitch. You know? I mean, there was not explosions, but just the sound, they will twitch, you know, the fear. So, Tony, I believe that Putin and his entourage will meet. They will face the day, when they're gonna. Yes, they will.
In this day and age, I just can't. Someone just with a drone, just quietly and secretly, just take him out. But I'm guessing that's unrealistic. and I'm guessing
that's
someone.
A good guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But as like we have so many examples of history and. We will see it, you know, I mean, that it's going to be that turn around. Because, as I say, you can wage the war for some time. This war is now 2 months old. And it's a big pressure, not just on the military, on troops and the losses of life, but people are suffering across, not just Russia, but across the globe because of his foolishness.
Absolutely. And,
that
and
will
it
be,
has to...
yeah.
Good. Thank you for indulging me, Mario. I respect your opinion, having lived over there. This week, we want to talk about whistleblowers and informants. And in a similar vein, it's about protecting information at the forefront of it. And it's about protecting the people that are courageous enough to highlight an issue, crime or fraud. So Mario, I wanted to start with a discussion about the difference between a whistleblower and an informant. Can you tell us about the differences?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to all listeners, we witnessing in daily basis, we're witnessing real in real time news that there was some informant working for the garment sector. More or less, we hear informants related to police. But informant is nothing new. It is, in simplest terms, I'm going to address this as a five-year-old, I would say.
Yeah.
It is somebody who comes forward or has been or she been recruited for the purposes to gather information on an individual or group on behalf of the law enforcement agencies. Now, when you become informant, people, you know, have that usually that romantic view on informants.
Yeah.
Informants is a person who or he or she has get some type of education and training and how to behave, how to communicate with operatives, intelligence operatives or detectives or whatever it is. So it's a separation between the whistleblower informant is that one, that informant has been either rewarded, I can go into this into depth a little later.
Yes.
It's called the MICE technology, money, ideology, coercion, or ego. And there's reasons why somebody becomes informed because of money or, you know, ideology. And one thing, when we talk about ideology informant, that's the cheapest informants, and this is the most dangerous informants. Phil Kirby was very well known, you know, the spy ring on the Cambridge. He was one of the fathers of the modern counterintelligence in military and MI5, MI6 in England, and he was spying for almost 30 years for the Russians because ideology.
That's
from
a
the
long time, oh, yeah, Mario. Absolutely.
Yeah. They have a Hensel who was the head of counterintelligence in FBI. He was guy who's supposed to protect the government against Russians and then Soviet spies. He approached the Russians and he was stealing the secrets and he's been caught. Philby not. Philby went to Russia. Hansen not. Yeah. So that's a very two famous cases. Then you have a coercion because that's one of the methods we apply that somebody, you know, sort of, let's just say DAA in my recent article spent last year, I think, like they spent like millions of dollars on almost, I will lie now, pretty sure, top of my head, $400 million in 1 year on informants. DEA.
You know,
yes, and they have about 18,500 informants who are in the heart of the drug cartels and everything else.
That's a bit then, scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And then you have the ego, right? Ego is usually revenge, you know, like, and you know, I want a better jobs and I want to destroy somebody on a part, so I willingly participate in providing information just to make somebody's life miserable. And not every information is related to the government. We must understand there's a passive and active informants. Passive is when they're running the case against organized crime group. And there is, active, and then the passive is when somebody's, you know, somewhere and providing from time to time information and they go into database in simple terms. Mm-hmm. In other hand, whistleblower, it's not non-government recruited person. So informants usually, as I said, like get some training in communication, how to act, you know, and you know, sort of, it's always some type of exit plan. And when you become informant for government, what I saw in my life experience, you had the validation because you don't become informant. Hey, hi, Tony, my name is Mario, give information. You were the, you know, some detective. It doesn't work that way. There's a special branch of people doing this, and then their identity must be protected by the law. Unfortunately, in Australia, we saw that sometimes this doesn't hold, and that puts a lot of strain on our law enforcement agencies getting informants to become willingly informants for the government sector. Now, when you become the whistleblower is a person with a name, surname, family, job, friends, who believes by acting, providing information about wrongdoing in corporation, they will assist corporation to reduce fraud, theft, hazard, wrongdoings by the summer management. And that this, there's a big difference between the informants who have become willingly, unwittingly, and you have the volunteers in corporate sector. Doesn't matter, we call the corporate sector and government sector because he had a very famous case in Australia history. It was called the Witness K, who was working for ACES.
Yes.
Australian Security Intelligence Services, who has been then in East Timor, Leicester Timor office, they planted 200 listening devices. And, this case is still going on, right? Him and his lawyer and everybody else. So, he was a whistleblower who has worked for government sector, and yet he has stepped out and said this is wrongdoings. And unfortunately, government sector whistleblower has been treated differently than in corporate sector. So in corporate sector, Tony, anybody can be whistleblower, and it costs no cent, nothing to corporation, but yet they had been named and shamed, and their reputation has been destroyed. So that's a major
Yes.
difference. Well, informant is being recruited through that MICE technology, methodology, excuse me, technology,
Yes,
methodology.
yes, yes.
Or there you have the whistleblowers who is a volunteer seeking nothing and providing a lot. So that's the major difference.
And so, from my understanding of what you've just said, Mario, a whistleblower is driven by different reasons than an
Correct.
informant. So, the informant is about the ego, revenge, money type situation, whereas a whistleblower is about doing what's right, noticing someone doing something wrong. So, that may be a corporation leaking toxic chemicals into a river versus an informant ratting on a drug cartel. So s
Drug cartel, or
completely.
let's just say, like you can work in the foreign government. I mean, that's some
Yeah.
different government agencies handling different type of the informants, right? Military, the foreign
Yes.
intelligence or police, yes.
Under the law, Mario, are they protected in different ways or similar ways? Or not protected very well at all?
Informant, it's usually, as I said, has been handled with a
Yes.
higher sophistication, I would call this, because they know in society. So this is not like in a movie,
Yes.
which is this in a movie, you are snitchy, and if you don't do what we tell you to do, we're gonna tell everybody. It doesn't work that way, because once when you become informant for the government sector, there's a lot of responsibility and accountabilities by government sector agencies who are working with informants. As just speaking broadly and generally,
Yes.
instead of naming police, military, and so on, they have the set of rules and regulations how to recruit, how to communicate, how to look after their well-being, safety, and everything else. And that cannot be guaranteed, right? We saw this in Afghanistan, we saw this in Iraq. When,
Yes.
once once when the people occupying force leaves, informant stays, except maybe key personnel.
Yeah.
But then yet, of course there's a protected by the law, and there's an entire set of legislations when it comes to informants which are not available for the public eyes. Because it's hard to challenge. And I'll show us that we had it in Victoria, where we're not able to protect a key informant, but they call the lawyer X. But there
Yes.
was, because it's like, they always find a way how to come across this. But as a majority cases, I'll say 90% of cases, informants had been protected because there's a law, legislations, and acts. In corporate sector, there are the some sets of legislations per each state and per
Yes.
industry. And then, but again, it falls on the shoulders of corporation to protect, not the government. Government is one thing, but corporation is another thing. In corporation, there is a set of the legislations in New South Wales and other states, which they need to protect well-being and the likelihood of the whistleblower. How this has been done, we can witness that there's less and less whistleblowers in
Yeah.
public, and that represents the problem, because whistleblower is like a, I'll call this as a guillotine, right? You never know if it's going to fall on somebody's head, and the whistleblower comes out of the darkness and says what need to say, or she, and society tells, flabbergasted. We all be surprised. Wow, Tony and Mario done this. They steal the Nutella from the storage. You know what I mean? there's a shortage of Nutella on market in Australia because Mario and Tony, we
stole it all.
Yes, like we're ciphering no Nutella in our storage. And then suddenly public stays, you know, stoned, surprised, flabbergasted. So the whistleblower, I don't think the corporations are handling this very well. And I can understand why, because for whistleblower to understand who is the whistleblower, as I mentioned in my monograph, Informative Whistleblower Management Plan, they must understand how to handle whistleblower, what's the key objective whistleblower, who to approach. And, you know, more often you can see whistleblowers, nobody listens to them in organization, while in corporate sector, so in government sector, informative talks directly to the key decision makers.
Yes.
Sort of. That information find a way to key decision maker. While in corporations, they don't want to listen to this because there is the reasons why corporations, they don't like a whistleblower. And usually when the whistleblower comes, it's not just Tony and Mario's, you know, ciphering 100 jar on Nutella monthly, but as we take it, putting into jars, not Nutella, but we put some type of different product,
branding.
Right? Which is, yes. Mm. And we saw this during the COVID, Tony. We saw this, that there was a Project Veritas was a great one in the US. They were how corporations was naive. They become the informants itself, the executive management. They were talking to the stranger and they were recording them. And so that's not a whistleblower. Whistleblower is a person who consciously steps out in the public,
makes a decision to do that.
Yeah, and hoping for the best. But unfortunately, society, it's unforgivable.
Yeah. I was just going to say, there's a couple of prominent people that come to my mind in and around this subject. So Edward Snowden and Julian Assange. Mm. And I'm really curious about your thoughts on those two prominent people and the way that they were involved in dissemination of information and whether that fell under a whistleblower, an informant. Where does that stuff sit? Because I actually think, from my personal perspective, that information should be freely available unless it is related to high-level security. What are your thoughts, Mario?
Again, Julian Assange and Eric Snowden are two different guys. They have some similarities. Eric Snowden was an IT kid, as well as his kid, as a Julian Assange. That being said, Eric Snowden, consciously, he was employed by the various agencies in the US, and he developed various type of the applications. You know, while you're sleeping, your camera on the phone, it's working and recording you that you even don't know. And of course, he has access to the many different applications for the purpose of eavesdropping, intercepting messages and decoding and, you know, surveillance of all types. Well, the Julian Assange, he positioned himself to be the beacon of the truth. And Julian Assange never worked in sort of like, how to say, secreting type, you know. I first of all for somebody, then I stepped out. The Officer Manning was the one who was helping Julian Assange, and that Officer Manning now becomes the woman two, 3 years ago, being pardoned by the Barack Obama, President of the U.S., Julian Assange decided to open the eyes of the world, of every citizen, about wrongdoings of governments across the globe. Now, I used to be working for the government, and it is sometimes it's very important to understand that when you dump the number of the messages there in the public, again, many innocent people gonna be caught in that that network of that scenario, and you know, we don't know how someone's gonna react when it comes to, you know, seeing, you know, again, Tony Mario
stealing Nutella
but putting the gem inside, you know, from Cuba.
Yeah,
and people become upset. While Eric Snowden was directly consciously decided to step out and said how it's been done, what has been done, by whom, where. There was a plenty of articles, but as you know, the both of them, they've been neglected by world society because Julian Assange now is going to be extradited to US.
I
WikiLeaks
know.
still working, and people believing that that's a whistleblower. You know, I mean, Julian Assange knew it, that there's plenty of people there who sees things, you know, hear the things. They come across the data informations, and they have nowhere to go, so they're going to him. So the WikiLeaks are still there, but as well, WikiLeaks is not anymore because Julian Assange, as a leader of that group, that organization, has been in Ecuador embassy, now in a prison in UK. And as a that person, everything what he's doing in WikiLeaks has become irrelevant. Same with Eric Snowden. Eric Snowden, as well, you know, nowhere to be seen or heard. He does some interviews from time to time, but all this information has become irrelevant. But what if that helps, actually? How this helps to the governments? Government sees where the problems rises, that information leaking, and they will implement policy procedures. Doesn't happen again in the future. And that's a two great examples of whistleblowers. Eric Snowden directly from the government. He was working for government and private sector, who was working for government. and then you have Julian Assange, who never hide that he represents the whistleblowers, who are happy to say the things we don't know or we're not aware. In
and
both cases,
he thought that that information was in the public interest, and for us, the general public, it was important for us to know. So different from Edward Snowden,
Yes, look, Eric Snowden, see, Eric Snowden had hands on deck, right? He saw things, he created the applications. You know, he was a constructor, an architect of the mass surveillance program, and his articles was, I was doing some of my university for my master's. You know, there was a optic cable goes from Spain and Italy, you know, and how the CIA tapped, you know, millions of the cables, and which were not fully aware, and that's a reality, right? Every undersea cable, it's under the threat from anybody, right? It's device has been created, and you know, but the CIA goes a step further. They took an exchange station in their hands and they just stop it, people. But you know, but Eric Snowden, as I said, like I think that his conscience was start working as a many whistleblowers, and let's not forget he left the life he know for the life which he doesn't know in foreign country, and we are alleged we don't know where he is, but pretty sure it's between China and Russia. And as well, you know, I mean, don't forget one thing, Tony. When you work for the government, particularly intelligence services, the moment you cross the line and you become the whistleblower, there's certain elements in the intelligence community and military and government who sees you as a traitor. And, you know, and
I
that's
wanted
what
to bring
been,
that up. I wanted to bring that up, Mario. There is a dichotomy between people's right to know and conversely the corporation or government that sees that as no, people don't have that right to know, and then us, the people, then have to make a decision whether we think this person is a traitor, divulging government secrets, or whether we think that we have the right to know. We don't always protect whistleblowers or informants or treat them very well, do we, Mario? Because if you take Australia, for instance, we have that bit of attitude that is don't dob, to use a colloquialism, don't dob, which I'm not in favor of that, because I actually think that it takes courage to speak about things that you find or know that are not right. I think it actually takes courage and strength to speak out. But we don't treat these people very well, do we, Mario?
Absolutely. You will agree to me, and listeners, information, it's a most valuable commodity in business, everything.
Yes.
Every information comes to the the desk. I call the desk, you know, police, the, you know, intelligence agencies, national security agency, whatever it is. One thing you must understand, people understand.
Yeah.
Every information being forwarded by somebody, it's been treated very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Because not every information being forwarded by the citizens or, you know, so-called citizens is valuable. That's where the intelligence services have the bigger task to check the source validity and information availability. So is this information available? Who is the source? You know, it's not every source information is a trustworthy, if I may say.
Yeah.
Whistleblowers in countries are different, right? Informant can be double agent, informant can be triple agent.
Yeah.
It can be deliberately, purposely be the part of the, you know, manipulation of the system. So, but whistleblower is not protected the way they should be. And I give them my pride when I train the organizations in how to manage the whistleblowers, to understand when they deal with the whistleblower, it's a human being. You must understand, it's a human being. Somebody with a wife and kids or husband, you know, he or she, whatever.
Family, yeah.
I apologize, we had a family, that person. They have their life history. And everybody need to take it seriously from the moment that person who voluntarily becomes whistleblower to goes to the one channel only. Channel who is capable to do all these tasks around the whistleblower and pass this information, I mean, securing the whistleblower in shortest, and securing information and information being passed on top organization without harming the whistleblower. Because whistleblower doesn't step out because has nothing or she to do. They're coming because they consciously make a decision that this is the right thing to do, as you say, spilling the poison in a river or chemical, you know what it is. Now, it's a longer process than we expected, but then information be received by the corporation, it doesn't go anymore back to a whistleblower, except, you know, leave the person to work, to do, and, you know, as go through my training process with my clients, explain how this has been done. But then what corporation is going to do with that information? Right.
Yeah.
This is where the biggest problem starts. And the whistleblower usually is not somebody who is being just in, let's just say, in the warehouse. Whistleblower can be a person who is working across the entire organization, has access to many files and anything else. And people are generally afraid what else that person did.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, sooner or later, we have the Netflix series, you know what I mean? Where we are, you know, 30 years from today, you know what I mean? 30 years ago, sorry, you know? You know, there was such a person, Tony and Mario, and, you know, they become the whistleblower, and the technical teller, and the whistleblower told them, you know what I mean? And nobody did care. Unfortunately, whistleblower, it's different than informant. It must be dealt even more sophisticated than informant. Informant has a tradition in government and law enforcement agencies as a role, and they know what they're doing through the decades and even centuries. Well, the whistleblower is not something new, but the culture is changed, and they need to understand that dealing with a human being who or she have family, have the life, and what they're doing, they believe it's correct, and they need to attend this as much professionally as sophisticated way which we train them. Yes. Yes, Tony, sorry.
Mario, is that why you wrote the Corporate Informant and Whistleblower Management Plan? Was it because you didn't see them being treated and managed the way that they should be? And firstly, and secondly, is the treatment of informants and whistleblowers from a corporate perspective similar across the globe? Or are there big variables between countries? I'm curious about how perhaps a whistleblower might be treated in Australia versus the US or versus Russia or versus China.
Again, we must always come from this angle, what information whistleblower provides.
Yes.
It's identical as for the government, for corporation. Who is the source of information, right? Is the new employee, old employee, with a longer work experience, and what is the type of information? Once, because the whistleblower just want to lend information, right? That's all what they want. They want to see that
they just want to speak about it.
Yeah, they want to see that somebody cares, somebody can do something about. And as I said, that's a very sophisticated process of operations, how to handle a whistleblower. I don't know for the across the globe, but I know that US take it very seriously, corporate whistleblowers.
Yes.
And they, as well in US, I know it's a practice, they're employing the people like myself who comes from the government sector, background, intelligence, and the counterintelligence. So they have those people who care about these, they know the processes and everything else. Mm. When it comes to government sector informants, they are, generally speaking, protected. They have the strategies for them, and they know how to use them. Of course, look, Tony, you know, in a prison, you know, you have so many informants. You have
yes,
and you know, the judicial system treat them differently, right? You know,
yes,
and they live in a confined space. But let's just say, in organized crime cases, or drug cartels, or anything else, those informants. And don't forget one thing. You should remember, maybe don't, but in 80s and particularly 90s, I would say, because I said, like, look at the Italy. Italy was one stage, they stopped having informants because the mafia, not just the mafia, but as well the Cosa Nostra, and I forgot the Napoli name, I'll remember later. They executed public prosecutor.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
They put like 5 tons of the bomb in his car. So, like, why would you become the informant if you can't even protect, the key
the
figure?
The highest,
you know,
level of judiciary. Yeah.
Camorra. That's the name of the other branch of the mafia,
yes.
Camorra. So, and in whistleblowers in organization, they had some legislations in New South Wales and other states, which they protect them, but as well as, again, comes on the shoulders of corporations. And corporations should understand, should know, how to handle them. Doesn't need to be complicated.
No.
From the moment the whistleblower just want to lend information, they want to see somebody cares as something has been done. And instead of this, whistleblower has been put in a public domain. Mm. And, you know, these people are usually suffering long-term consequences by society, by corporations. And their life likelihood and lifestyle is gone.
Yeah. Mario, part of the work that you and the team at Insight Intelligence do is around the training, and you consult around the management of whistleblowers and informants, and you do this across the globe, don't you?
That's right.
What does that sort of work look like for you and the team? Do you go in and work with the higher levels of management in a corporation? Do you get to work with the actual whistleblower? What does that look like for Insight Intelligence, how you do this work?
I work with the one company which was utilizing third party. I mean, come on, third party has a website. Become the whistleblower. You have something to share with us, you share with us, and we keep anonymous, this and that. And I told this company they have their big problems because they had a lot of civil litigations, how the whistleblower's information is being handled. Mm-hmm. So when I come there, I usually explain to them, they need to understand, as we, through this process of our conversation right now, you and I, difference between informant and difference whistleblower.
Absolutely.
Most of corporations for the training, they believe they're going to learn some craft of espionage. And I always told them, information is your tool. It's your weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I teach them how to handle whistleblower once they understand. Leave the informants on the side. That's a government sector. Don't go that path. That is not your incorporations. You know, if you start creating informants. Now, Tony, some of corporations I visited,
yes,
and I spoke with their executive management, they told me they have the specialized team, again, third party, who recruits informants. Now, you don't recruit informants in organization, you know, because first of all, that's illegal. And secondly, informants, as I said, like it's a different, on different level than the whistleblower. So when I trained them, I told them, if somebody becomes a whistleblower, it's not every day, it's once in 6 months, once in a year, but you need to be prepared. And the team and everybody else needs to be prepared how to handle this thing. And of course, it's a dual process of training. You're teaching the executive management what the whistleblowers are and how was the benefits. One whistleblower I was witnessing, he was seeing the fraud on such a large scale and nobody cared about
was
that
speaking
one.
Up.
Yeah, and people around him, they say like, you know, nothing's going to change. So he stepped out. And the corporations immediately, you know, was a poorly handled. And of course, the person was, you know, being publicized and ostracized by, you know, by family and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I told him, this guy brought you the information which prevented you to bleed the money. And look at what you did. And sort of, there was some type of negotiation with that person. And, you know, he was being looked after. And so on, so on, in of course, in the frame of the capabilities, the possibilities company can do. But when you train these people, you train the executives to understand that there's a benefit having the whistleblowers and not the negativity. And the whistleblowers,
Mario, that's what I was wondering, because if I put my corporate hat on and I'm thinking about my corporation, it's in my corporation's best interest to know if there's fraud happening. So one would think that you would protect that person that brought you the information as a key component to your corporation being better and doing better. But what I'm understanding is that because there's so many corporations that don't understand how to do this, they're not doing that. And they've got bad outcomes for their corporation. They've got bad outcomes for the whistleblower. And it's all round bad for everyone, when in fact it could actually be a very... it could be a great experience in terms of the corporation and driving them forward and lowering their costs and reducing fraud. And they should be protecting that person that's brought that information. So I'm guessing that there's lots of training that you do, Inside Intelligence does, around just that small component within organizations.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I say, the whistleblower is like a guillotine. Imagine, you know, with the guillotine, you know, and you put your head and you never know what's going to sharp metal going to snap your neck, right, cut your head. Why is that? Because when a whistleblower is being treated well and other employees, and doesn't matter what type of organization you are or what level of management you are, you never going to know if your wrongdoing is going to be forwarded by whistleblower. Right. So there's another element, how to investigate this information, how to establish.
And you do that as well, don't you, Mario?
Absolutely. The process
is complete part and parcel of what you do.
Yeah. And now at the end, look at the brighter side. Corporation who's been trained how to handle whistleblowers, you know, and they do process of internal investigation so meticulously, so well, public's going to know.
Yeah.
It's a good reputational sign.
It is. It is.
And when you have a whistleblower, usually as much as negativity whistleblower receives in media or in public stage, there's always the elements of those who's going to be interested in story.
Yeah.
And that story, you know, it can go on 60 minutes sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. All
so like, it's like, it's a vicious circle. So as I always say, training and education, when the meet opportunity,
it's so important
in whistleblower management, it's going to result in a beneficiary results. If you have no training, an opportunity rises and you have the whistleblower approaching and not handling it very well, it's going to have the echoes across the globe, not just in your own company.
Yeah.
Training is very
Mario,
important.
Mario, If you have an instance where a whistleblower has talked to a CEO and that CEO and corporation don't have whistleblower and informant management plans in place, they can actually reach out to you and you will guide them through that process
Right.
and make sure that it's managed appropriately for everyone's sake.
That's correct, Tony.
Yeah.
I'm inviting everybody who experience or they believe they're going to experience, and you will experience
Yeah.
That phenomena called whistleblower, because a whistleblower is not just how to handle whistleblowers, how to handle information, how to investigate information, how to run your PR. And, you
Yeah.
know, this is all be done to the start of I call the war room, and where you're doing this, a problem. And I mentioned this before, it's a pre-mortem analysis. You know, you're doing predictive analysis. If the whistleblower comes with what type of information, and you put all these elements, and then you strike the three worst case scenarios. And that's the training what I'm offering to the
Yes.
clients, particularly CEOs. CEOs should understand value
And
of
know
whistleblowers
this.
here. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Tony.
Now, Mario, last week we ran out of time, and I don't want to run out of time again this week. But
yes, sorry.
Our conversation around whistleblowers and informants actually leads into my question that we didn't get to last week about providing expert witness and providing reports in the judicial system. Because often whistleblower or informant information does have an end result in some form of judicial or court process. And that's another part of what Insight Intelligence does.
That's correct.
And that expert witness training and understanding, I wish that I had known years ago that there were companies that could help you with this
Thank
and
you, Tony.
prepare you for a court process, because I'm telling you, people, it is not pleasant. Mario, can you tell us about how you prep you and your team for as expert witnesses and how you help others prepare themselves to be expert witnesses?
To roll to be expert witness, you know, of course, I was engaged with the third parties. And based on my education, my tertiary qualifications, and of course, work experience in levels most of people don't have, of course, put you into that role of expert witness. So what my role was, always been, if an investigation has been done, and the client goes to the lawyer and they believe that that investigation has been illegally, or they use the methods that should not be used, or any misinformation be placed into the report or statements, I'll review this one. So I'll review the from the moment this case has been opened to concluded, I'll inspect all elements on behalf of my client, which is third party, to prove this approved that method has been consistent according to the law, acts, legislations, and that investigator qualifications matching this case. So that's just a few elements of the investigation. So my qualifications are, like, you know, I've done the forensics academy, and, you know, I know that this application has been done. So I'm investigating from a scientific point of view, legal point of view, and a methodological point of view, that this case has been run properly, investigation has satisfaction elements, that there's not been influenced by fraud or misinformation, yeah, disinformation, threats, blackmail, whatever. Yes. Now, there is a different type of expert fitness we have as well for the motor vehicles. We have the person who does the motor vehicles accidents, crashes, you know, brake and enters, everything related to vehicles. And that person, David, has extensive experience in mechanics, but not to be just mechanic. He knows the metallurgy. He understands the chemical processes, scientific processes, everything else around the vehicle. And he as well assists me when it comes to investigation, that something would happen to the motor vehicle matching those what says in report and the statement given by the client. And that's the way we approach it, from scientific way, academic way, work experience, and legal, and of course, lawful side of this investigation. So that's expert witness we provided here, and as well, I have the forensic psychologist, which is Debbie, and she's the one who actually goes on the court, and as an expert witness, she can state that this person, for example, Mario says to Tony, I have the diabetes from so much Nutella, right? And because there's no Nutella anymore, my diabetes is going to the roof, and you know, I have a PTSD. But I didn't go to the doctor. And or maybe I go to GP and we go on a court. You take me to court. You had no PTSD, Mario. Debbie comes in, and you know she again from her professional view.
She can say, "Well, actually,
yeah,
he might have gone to a GP, but here's elements of PTSD,
PTSD doesn't exist." Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And then court says, "Okay, so what's your qualifications?" Of course, before the proceedings, you know what I mean. And then you present all these qualifications, and of course, you need to be rectified as a recognized as an expert witness rather than just somebody doing the blur. Because after all, if you step as an expert witness and you show no understanding, no knowledge, little work experience, and you're just doing opinion based reporting or giving statement, you're not expert witness, and you're gonna be, you know, literally seen by the court as a clown, and you know, the lawyer and everybody else is gonna be sent out. So it's very careful. So that's what we're doing. Psychology, motor vehicles, and of course marine vessels, and of course forensic investigations, and expert witness here.
Fantastic, Mario. We are just about out of time. I want to do a plug. I know, we have so much fun.
That's okay. Good. Yes.
It goes so quickly. It goes in the blink of an eye talking about this stuff. I find it so, my love of criminal and forensics just is in overload. Mario, I just want to do a big shout out again for your show on Alive 90.5 FM Sydney on Wednesdays called Life is a Battlefield. You're always looking to talk to wonderful people about their life experience each week. And I want to let the audience know that you can reach out to Mario again. Wherever you're watching this interview, there will be notes attached that give you direct link to connect with Mario. And more particularly, if you're a CEO in a corporation, you're thinking about being a whistleblower, for goodness sakes, just touch base with Mario and the team at Insight Intelligence first. If you know that your corporation is not set up to manage the information that you want to divulge, please talk to Mario. He'll be able to guide you in that process. And if you're a CEO and you've been confronted with a bit of information that you didn't know about your corporation, again, reach out to Mario and the team at Insight Intelligence. They are your experts in helping you navigate this fraught area of life, corporate life, and indeed private life for many people. Mario Beckers, thank you so much once again being such an amazing co-host. Your wealth of knowledge and wisdom inspires me each and every week, and I can't encourage the audience enough, those listening, to connect with Mario. He is just a beautiful human being, but also an expert in intelligence. Mario's group, whilst they already work globally, we're going to be pushing, Mario and the team are going to be pushing into the US in the near future. So if you're listening in the US and you want to connect with Mario, I encourage you to do that now whilst he is pushing into the US and helping people across the globe. Mario Beckers, thank you once again. That, my friends, is your lot for this week. I want to wish you a wonderful weekend, and Mario and I will be back next week with another show. And next week we're going to be talking about all the elements of training and education that Mario and the team provide, and he has his own courses which are phenomenal. So we're going to be talking about that next week. Mario, have a wonderful week, and that, my wonderful audience, is your lot for this week. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Thank you, Tony.
Bye, Mario.
Thank you. Happy birthday, Tony.
Ah, thank you.